got it. Here we go. No such thing as a holiday around here, not for the Tom and Curly Show. There is for Tom, anyway. Jimmy Tucker is sitting in. Are you here again tomorrow?
Yep, here again tomorrow.
All right, good. The teeny tiny lady is being brought in now, and it is our way to be able to have the wooden wagon come in, and as it draws closer. All last week we had, I think it was Lawrence O'Donnell was in here. And it's nice to get some kid. This guy is from Buffalo, New York, and he gets a chance to sit in and have the teeny tiny lady brought into the wooden wagon as the wagon draws closer to the microphone. Let's listen in.
Well, I'm here in the freezing cold getting free chicken sandwiches.
Why?
Because the food tastes great. I mean, it's chicken. It's fried chicken.
Well, which one will you eat before you eat all the other ones?
I like fried chicken.
That is right. And you may now eat it.
That
enjoy.
Wow. Got it. A little rusty in there on the diving board, Andrew?
I don't have as many available pots, so I have to kind of carry it again.
All right, okay. Cry me a river.
I'll cry you a waterfall.
I'd be done.
All awesome.
Right. Look at somebody brought Andrew a sense of humor for Christmas. All right. Are you ready for this? Can we have Danny come on? All right, here we go. Ready, come Danny O'Neill.
You throw this ball through the hoop. A basketball.
Danny wrote this song 7 years ago.
This ball through the goal. A soccer ball.
And sang it, and he thought it would never go anywhere. And here it is. It continues to haunt him.
It's a nice legacy.
Yeah, isn't good?
Yes.
Hey, Danny.
I thought you were going to bring me on and introduce me or say something like that.
No, Danny O'Neill, everybody.
Or maybe there was a problem with the pot. Isn't that Andrew's having problems with the pot?
The pot's bothering him.
No, I wasn't sure if we'd lost the connection, so I was testing.
All right. There we go. All right, hey, Danny.
Am I properly potted up?
You're good. Hey, can I? Jimmy Tucker said at the very beginning of the show at 9 o'clock, which seems like about six hours ago, he said that he felt that yesterday's game was what? What'd you say, Jimmy?
I felt it was the best Seattle game of the year.
Where are you with that, Danny?
Well, most entertaining. It certainly wasn't the most pleasurable. I mean,
no,
it was like getting kicked in the nuts at the end of the game.
Whoa, with the salty language. You know
I'm just telling you what it felt like.
Hold
you
on a second.
Me,
Wait a minute. We might be doing a morning radio show, but we don't talk that way. We're better than that.
Felt like I got kicked in the ding-ding. Is that better?
That's better.
All right, good. Okay. So, Jimmy's saying that as far as, like, entertaining?
Entertaining. You got Marshawn Lynch back. We're on the one-yard line again. Coach Pete did it to us again, but that's okay. We loved it. I loved it. It was like a soap opera yesterday. You know,
It was brutal, though, with the delay of game penalty.
Exactly. Like,
can you walk everybody through that?
Wouldn't you have loved to see that play without that penalty?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. All of a sudden, the elevation that Marshawn Lynch got earlier in the game on his run from the one, and then it's inexplicable. I can't remember seeing a delay game penalty in that critical of a situation. So here's what happens. With less than a minute to go, about 40 seconds, Seattle has a 4th-and-10 play. The game comes down to that. They call their last timeout to be able to set that play up. So they're out of timeouts. They throw a pass to John Ursua, who has not caught a pass all year. He's a rookie out of Hawaii. He catches it right at the very doorstep of the goal line. They're a foot away from a game-winning touchdown. Now they have to hustle to the line and spike the ball. And the reason you do that is because the clock stops.
Right.
They've got a player that's hurt, George Fant. They're not sure if he can continue. They have to wave him up because he's down on the ground after the 4th-down catch. Everybody's all out of sorts. Then, okay, the clock stopped, and everybody kind of takes a breath and relaxes, and they relax too much because they took too much time. Guys were late getting onto the field, specifically Marshawn Lynch, who had not been on the field for any of that drive getting subbed in, and it was just too late, and they end up getting flagged for a delay of game. And I will admit that I was as uncognizant, is that a word?
Yeah.
I was unaware of the play clock as the Seahawks were, because they didn't even get close to getting that playoff. And that ends up looming large, because instead of 3 chances from the 1 yard line, they had 3 chances from the 6 yard line, and they end up being a couple inches short on Jacob Hollister's 4th-down catch.
Who can we point to and blame the loss on?
If you want to blame, ultimately, it's the head coach, because he's the person that's in charge of all of the sideline machinations. Mm-hmm. And this is the use of timeouts and burning through timeouts is a pretty consistent strain. That's something that happens with this Seattle team. This specific play, it's not the head coach. It was the substitution getting put in late, Russell not hearing the play or realizing that the play was being called in, and then Marshawn Lynch getting on there late. Kind of the confluence of those, and I would say in order, the fact that Marshawn wasn't ready to go. He probably should have had his helmet with him, and he was the last guy on the field. But ultimately, it should not have come down to that. It really, if that's the final domino that triggered a delay a game, they should have had other options that were ready to go there. They just got behind on the clock, and they never caught up.
Anybody else feels incredibly depressing watching the first four quarters of that game, not until the last few minutes when things started to turn around? They just seemed, San Francisco seems unstoppable. So is it the Ravens and 49ers in the Super Bowl?
No, God, no, John. They've, for the first two quarters, it looked awful. And I thought Seattle, like that playoff game next week that they're going to play, it looks like a sentence more than an opportunity. Uh-huh. Seattle played really well in the second half. I'm more optimistic about their chances in the playoffs coming out of that game than I was going into that game. I thought they were going to get mauled. I thought what we saw in the first half was going to continue in the second half, and I don't know how Jimmy feels, but I come away from it pretty encouraged by how they're playing. I think they've got a really good chance against Philadelphia.
Exactly. It showed the core of who they are, and the truth is we want to play Philadelphia right now. We don't want to play Minnesota. I know that's a home game. It's a better matchup, and they're just as dinged up as we are.
Yeah, that part's true. I think you always want the playoff game at home, if only because of the memories. And look, I'm not going to say that it was better off for them to lose last night, because I think that moment, if Marshawn had scored, like Jimmy was talking about, how memorable that would have been. That would have been one of the all-time great moments in Seahawks history. It's a bummer it didn't happen. I don't think that the reasons that they lost that game, I don't think it makes it less likely that they're going to win in the playoffs going forward. If that had cost them a bye, or if that had meant that, okay, you're going on the road to New Orleans instead of playing home at home against Minnesota, I'd say, okay, yeah, you kind of screwed yourself. You're in trouble now. I really don't feel that's the case. I think that their odds of making a deep run into the playoffs are the same going on the road against Philadelphia as they would be hosting Minnesota. You're still going to have a tough matchup on the road in week two of the playoffs.
Yeah. Either Chris Collinsworth or Al Michaels, either one of them, I can't remember who said it. I was too distracted by the fact they were wearing sweaters. They said that every time Marshawn Lynch went on the field, you were basically giving an indicator to the defenses what you were going to do.
A little bit. That's definitely true, but then there was the pass play that they called to him and drew a penalty on it because they pretty much tackled Marshawn, and that would have been a walk-in touchdown to Marshawn. Yeah, I don't think he has the familiarity, and that's why he hadn't been on the field on that two-minute drill before that final play, that final series where they tried to bring him in.
Yeah.
He hadn't been on the field for the final 2.5 minutes because, yeah, he's 5 days, got 3 days worth of practice in there. At the same time, every time he went on the field, you could hear a burst of energy. I think his presence gave them a boost.
Here is his touchdown.
Two tight ends, single wide out is Lockett. Marshawn in the backfield. Marshawn goes up over the top. He's in! Touchdown! Seahawks! Beast mode! Does it again! Welcome home! Number 24 from 1 yard out. It's like old home week, and Skittles come flying out of the stand.
Yeah, and then Jen Mueller gets a hazard pay having to interview Marshawn Lynch in the locker room. You ready for this? Have you heard this, Danny?
Yes, I've heard both of them. I can't hear enough, Marshawn.
So sorry for her.
Oh, Marshawn, it's been a long time since you played physically. How do you feel after that one?
Like a champ.
You're going to get, but Jen, you know you're getting three words. So have the follow-up question ready to go.
This is a team that has shown a lot of grit and resiliency. How do you characterize the game and what you saw?
Well, it was just a game of football, to be honest with you.
Would you tell Travis? I saw you talking to him during the game. Advice that you were giving him? Tips?
Man, that's, you know, if I told you, I had to do something to you.
Uncomfortable laughter.
It was classic you, diving over everybody to get the touchdown. Did it feel the same?
You know, I felt good, man. But at the end of the day, you know, I played to win, so it is what it is.
What'd you sense from the fans when you walked out of the field?
Love, bro. Straight up 12s. They've made your boy feel right at home.
What was different about the offense in the second half when the ball was moving and points were going up?
I think we just settled down. I started to feel some legs come up underneath me. But
what does that mean, Danny? Legs come up underneath me. What does that
mean? Well, he started to feel stronger. Oh. He started to get his bearings. He was ready to go. He got his legs back. Oh. You don't know, come on, get your legs back.
Get your legs
out. I don't
know,
maybe sometimes you're like, I think every day about 9:15, you start to get your legs underneath you after you're spinning in a circle.
For the most part, I think just overall the whole situation. You know, everybody settle down.
Thanks, Marshawn.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
There you go, Marshawn Lynch talking in his return to the Seahawks.
And then Jen Miller getting 1,500 cc's of lactate ringer.
Have you heard the other? Because that's just the excerpt. Like, Marshawn was very polite to her compared to the other reporters.
No, now, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. He cursed every other word, which is unusual. Like, Marshawn Lynch doesn't swear that much. Like, people, it's not like he doesn't swear, but it's not frequent. And the other ones, he's constantly swearing, which I'm convinced is the best response to. They're making him talk. They're telling him, we're going to fine you if we don't talk.
Right.
But so he's going to talk profanely to the other reporters, which I find hilarious. The idea that everybody's standing around like, oh, please let this corporate HR policy make this man answer our deep probing questions about it. I think it's hilarious that he just makes it profane.
Is he mixing up the different curse words, or does he have one he keeps going to?
Well, you know what? I don't know if I'm specific to the vernacular. Okay. I know that the way he speaks borders on poetry for me. I love the way I could listen to Marshawn Lynch read a phone book.
Okay,
he is as entertaining as it gets for an athlete interview.
Let me ask you a last final question. So we go to Philadelphia, we beat Philly. Then explain to us what happens.
Most likely, if Seattle wins at Philadelphia, they are then going to face the 49ers unless Minnesota beats Green Bay. If Minnesota beats Green Bay and Seattle beats Philadelphia, then the Seahawks would take on the 2 seed, which is Green Bay. They would go play the Packers there.
Okay.
And most likely scenario is if Seattle wins, they're going to go to San Francisco.
Oh, then
round three. Ding, ding.
Thank you, Danny.
That. Talk to you soon.
All right,
sorry about the profane.
No, that's sorry. That's okay. And we're gonna.
I didn't mean to.
We'll clean it up.
Muss
up
the joints.
We'll clean it up in post. There he goes. All right. Let's see the fact that 1980s drug czar says that Mayor Pete's drug decriminalization plan is absolutely nuts. So this goes back to Mr. Bennett, and he was, of course, the drug czar, which is a ridiculous term, title that's given to a new cabinet member that started during, was it the Reagan administration? Was it Nancy?
Yeah.
That
drug had czar, the, I mean, king. It sounds like kingpin.
Yeah, whenever you put czar next to it, basically means
drug lord.
Sort of it's an annexing of a position. You're sort of an add-on to the thing. Here's what Mayor Pete was saying to the Des Moines Register when he believes that all drugs should be decriminalized.
I would not have said even 5 years ago that what I believe now, which is that incarceration should not even be a response to drug possession. But what I've seen is that while there continue to be all kinds of harms associated with drug possession and use, it's also the case that we have created, in an effort to deal with what amounts to a public health problem, we have created an even bigger problem, a justice problem, and its own form of a health problem.
And on that is that across the board, so if it's meth or coke or ecstasy, any drugs, if it's possession, incarceration isn't.
That's right. It doesn't mean legalization of everything.
Not everything.
What? Come on, John. That's a clip. You know, it bothers me because I understand the deeper meaning of what he means by this.
Okay, go ahead.
And it just bothers me because this drug czar from the 80s, he was the person that actually...
You know what? He has something to say.
This is crazy. You know, this is a bright guy. I don't agree with him, but obviously he's a guy of some subtlety and intellect. No subtlety here. He acknowledges the harm that these drugs do. Goodness gracious, it's incredible the harm these drugs do. Cocaine? I was the drug czar during the crack epidemic. This was a terrible, horrible thing. Particularly devastating in the inner city communities. Mm-hmm. He said it's created a larger problem to enforce the laws against this. I don't know what that larger problem is. Let's remember, 62,000 people a year now die from the use of illegal opiates. Mm-hmm. That's more every year than we lost in Vietnam. We have a terrible problem going on in this country. We do not need to encourage more of it.
All right. Mayor Pete goes on to say that... that the problem is it's the black market. So if you legalize it, remove the black market, you get the profit incentive out of it, and then you'd be able to control the supply. The demand would be better regulated, and we would have a less violent society.
But the issue is he's trying to decriminalize a health issue. And the problem with this so-called drug czar in the 80s, he made it a justice system issue. I have family members who were affected by this, who have criminal records, who've been in jail for being addicted to crack cocaine. And this person is telling how horrible this is by decriminalizing it, but he's not looking at the fact of the situation. What did he do in the 80s? Nothing. He made it worse. He broke up communities by, you know, if you're selling crack cocaine, it's a felony. If you have powder cocaine, this is misdemeanor.
Right.
Who has crack? Who has powder?
Right.
You know?
And do you know the history of that? Because it's really, that's the first part of the story. Do you know the back start part of that story?
I know part of it, but I want to hear what you're going to say.
So the for the whole sort of context of it is the black community, primarily ministers in New York City, said you are treating our communities as less than citizens by allowing the scourge of crack cocaine to take over and completely destroy. So then it was a number of very active, very well-respected individuals in the black community that lobbied hard Congress to change the laws and have crack cocaine, have the laws be far more firm and detrimental to the individual caught with crack cocaine than cocaine. So when the people said later on, oh, I see, so crack cocaine because black people, but white people do the powdered cocaine.
But at the same
origin
time,
of it, the origin of it, and the release of that sort of entire force upon the black community was propagated by the black community.
But the issue with that, John, is they didn't follow up with the rest of that, which was treatment, mental health.
Right.
They didn't do that. They said, "Oh, we're just going to criminalize it," and then therefore, when you criminalize it, then you take away all the other assets that need to be to support that.
Right. Well,
now we're dealing with methamphetamines and things like that, which is Big Pharma.
Right.
But we don't see anything coming after Big Pharma attacking it, right?
Well, no, you do. They're suing them for billions of dollars.
Suing, but who's going to jail over it?
Well,
nobody.
Well, they could possibly be to jail.
Nobody, but who's going to jail
over it? Hold on. They're going to listen. They have the family that's still around. They haven't left the country. Well, what would you charge them with? What are you going to charge them with? They made a drug, and then they encouraged doctors, and we don't know whether or not they withheld enough information. Some people were saying, yeah, you didn't tell enough.
So black people took cocaine, made crack, and they went to jail.
Well, yeah, because it's much easier to catch the guy on the street because he probably has a bunch of other crimes to go with it, including.
Probably has a bunch of other crimes?
Yeah.
I have relatives who sold marijuana.
Right.
And I'm not saying that was right in the 80s, but they've done 8-9 years of jail time for selling marijuana. And the same marijuana today, I can walk my dog at 10 o'clock at night, and I can walk past certain houses who are using marijuana.
Right, I understand that. Well, you have to look at where we are right now with it and the number of people who are in federal crime just because of marijuana. They also have a whole host of other violent crimes that went along with it. If they really wanted to clean it up, the state would reduce the price that they charge for marijuana, stop living off the tax of that. You'd really then be able to get rid of the black market if you drop the price down. But they don't mind the fact that the black market's in place as long as they continue to make 45 or 48% on every bag.
And we never address treatment in none of this conversation at all.
No, it's because it's not, because the treatment, there's damage done early on, and then the treatment is the second part.
Well,
people self-medicate.
Well, people got to be proactive, and we're not proactive. We're reactive in a society.
That's how it works. We're right back. This one. It's a rap all day here. Filled with two T's and a Tom and Curly. Jimmy Tucker chose this.
Hello? Yep, I did.
All right. I have, I don't know any of these.
I Want a Woman, 1988. Almost.
Got it. You
know this one, Jimmy? I'm not familiar with this one.
All right. Lake Washington Windows and Doors reminding you, don't be like Tom and live in a hole in the ground without any windows and doors, because it's not good. You can't you can't see what's coming. You, birds don't have anything to run into. It makes it much easier to have windows and doors. And if the windows and doors are in any way damaged, if you notice that there's a crack in the door is not sitting right, or perhaps the window has got the double pane, but there's moisture in between, that's a problem for you, and you need to get those fixed. It's Lake Washington Windows and Doors. Thank you for supporting this part of the Tom and Curly Show. No blondes allowed. 50 years after the junior high experiment, students say it had a big impact on them. You get a chance to look at this. Is this from the Washington Post?
Yeah.
Yeah. Explain what No Blondes Allowed was.
Well, it was a test. Basically, a teacher had this situation where he had kids who were blonde, and they were treated differently than the kids who had brunette hair and brown eyes.
Okay.
And so, basically, those kids came to school, and when they came to school that day, they had to use the back door
They had to sit in a certain area. They had to use a certain bathroom.
Okay.
And that was set up that whole week in school.
Okay.
So these kids had to basically separate themselves based on hair color. And blondes were not allowed to use the front door, not allowed to sit in the same area as the brunettes,
okay.
and were not allowed to even ask questions unless asked.
Okay. So then 50 years later, did they follow up and find these people?
Yes, they did. They followed up and found these people, and the majority of them said it was something that really affected them in their life.
Okay. Did the people – so were the people with blonde hair supposed to treat the people with brunettes differently?
The people with blonde hair were treated as minorities.
Okay, got it.
And so they were treated as if they were second-class citizens.
Okay.
And it really affected a lot of the kids.
And were the brunette people told to treat the blonde people poorly?
Yes, they were told to treat them poorly.
Okay. There were also certain students that were picked out as enforcers that were specifically tasked with in some way making sure that everyone followed the new structure, which was that blondes were
okay.
Not
so then they went this author of this piece then went ahead and tried to find everybody.
Yeah,
talk to the blondes to find out how they felt about it. Did they talk to the people that were the enforcers?
No one who was an enforcer wanted to be a part of the study now.
Okay, so they were told, these kids were told, you treat this group differently than that group. And by the way, you guys, this extra little group in here, you're going to make sure that the cruelty continues. So you're going to always sort of set the level by which we're going to treat the blonde-haired people.
Well, the key part about it was they were not treating them cruelly.
Uh-huh.
They were treating them differently. The fact is, people chose to be crude.
Okay.
That wasn't part of the subject, be mean.
Okay.
It was just, they're blonde, they need to be treated differently.
Okay.
And by being treated differently, that's where the crudeness came in.
Okay, so this is very similar to Jane Elliott, who I think she's in Iowa. She's a teacher in 1968. She says that she's in her classroom. Kids are coming in and sitting down. The first boy in the class says, hey, why do they kill King? So this is the day after Martin Luther King was killed. And then Jane Elliott launched into this experiment, which she has sort of been going on. And now she gets paid $6,000 a day to go to corporations and talk to them about it. She separated the kids between the blue-eyed kids and the brown-eyed kids.
Yes.
She told the brown-eyed kids that they are superior to the blue-eyed kids. And then she watched to see what happened.
You think you know how that would feel to be judged by the color of your skin?
Yeah.
Do you think you do? No, I don't think you'd know how that felt unless you had been through it, would you? It might be interesting to judge people today by the color of their eyes. Would you like to try this?
Yeah!
Sounds like fun, doesn't it? Since I'm the teacher and I have blue eyes, I think maybe the blue-eyed people should be on top the first day. I mean, the blue-eyed people are the better people in this room. Oh, yes, they are. Blue-eyed people are smarter than brown-eyed people.
My dad isn't that stupid.
Is your dad brown-eyed?
Yeah.
One day you came to school and you told us that he kicked you.
He did.
Do you think a blue-eyed father would kick his son?
Yeah. My dad's
blue-eyed. He's never kicked me. Greg's dad is blue-eyed. He's never kicked him. Rex's dad is blue-eyed. He's never kicked him.
Well, that kid's got a lot of talking to do.
Yeah.
This is a fact. Blue-eyed people are better than brown-eyed people.
Okay, so then the kids live with it for a day or a day and a half, and what she notices in this experiment that the blue-eyed kids, is the blue-eyed or better?
The blue-eyed kid, yes.
Whatever the one was. She noticed that the group that was being deciding that they were not as good as the other group, they did not perform as well in tests, that they were despondent and they were sad, and that the other group were pressing upon them. And she was hoping that this experiment in 1968 would lead to these kids having this revelation of, like, what's it like to actually be treated discriminated against. She then went on to do all sorts of different things. I mean, she was on the Johnny Carson show. Johnny Carson had her on. I mean, she became like the person to have on television. And she's still out there today. I think she's in her 80s. She quit teaching back in the 1980s so that she could go do sort of cultural diversity stuff in different corporations. And it's back up again with the person doing the experiment with the blondes and the brunettes.
Yeah.
What do we take from it today? That is Jane Elliott just as relevant today as she was back in 1968?
Very relevant. Yeah. Very, very. Because this is the subtleness of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have these institutionalized thought processes that goes through that. And you have kids who are told they're inferior.
Uh-huh.
They're told the inferior. Not in the ways they are told. When I was in elementary school, my teacher was talking about getting a new job. Okay. Uh-huh. This was during busing. And I was a little happy. He goes, yeah, I did my time in Vietnam. And so I walked up to this guy and I'm all happy going, hey, you were in Vietnam. My dad was in Vietnam too. And he goes, nah, idiot. I got a job at a better school. This was my third grade teacher.
Oh, okay.
You know, so,
oh, his Vietnam was serving at that school.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I'm a third grade guy, and here's a teacher I look up to, and he basically associated teaching me with being in Vietnam, and now he's going to a better school.
Uh-huh.
How do you think that I internalized that?
Okay. But his interpretation was this was a difficult school to teach in.
But that was his interpretation? Yes. Okay. But do you express that to third graders in the way you express it? No.
No. Well, obviously, he didn't quite get your reference. If he called you a jerk or whatever, then it's amazing.
Here's my teacher calling me an idiot.
Yeah.
All right. Here's my teacher telling me I'm slow. Here's my teacher telling me I don't know any better.
Right.
So I start to fill into that role.
Yeah.
You know, and I looked up to this teacher. I didn't see it as a negative until I got older and realized this is what he put out there. And I grabbed it because it was all I had.
I see.
He's my teacher. He's teaching me.
Yeah.
So if you're a teacher and you're telling a kid you're not as good as this kid or you're not as good as that kid,
mm-hmm.
at some point that kid is going to absorb that. Parents do that. My father would always say, stop being an idiot.
Yeah.
Stop being an idiot. You know, when I was 12, I thought my middle name was idiot.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just that process.
Okay. So if someone scores, if you're black and you score 900 points on the SATs, we'll give you an additional 400.
No, I'm not asking for giving points, but you got to think of the structure that you're in to be able to understand how to take the test. I scored 690 on my SAT.
Okay.
I was a Prop 48 kid.
This is the days when you got 200 for putting down math and 200 for putting down English.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I had no one to prep me, teach me how to study for the SAT.
Yeah.
I took the SAT the day after my prom, the last day I can possibly take it.
Yeah.
No one told me my sophomore year what to do to prep for this.
Yeah.
And I went to a private school where I was a student athlete on scholarship playing football, baseball, basketball, and track.
Okay.
No one prepared me for that. And I was, back then they had Prop 48. I was a Prop 48 kid, which means I had to sit out my first year.
Okay.
You know, but I get into college and I realize that I'm not prepared for it. And it wasn't until I had a professor there who said, something's not right here. You're failing these classes. And he put me through the testing and found out that I had a high IQ, but I was dyslexic. But no one processed that with me until I was a freshman in college.
I see. So you
But I had I had athletic gifts to put me in that position. What about those kids who do not have that?
Yeah. That would be me. The 620, what did you score in the combined?
I scored 680.
Yeah. All right. Should have cheated off of Jim Farley second time around. You would have done better. All right. Thank you. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. By the way, teeny tiny lady picked the letter of the day yet?
Yes.
Okay. What's wrong, Jimmy? You all right?
I'm fine.
Okay, good.
I'm the one with two college degrees, not you.
It's true.
And I did graduate from both programs.
Wow.
UW.
Wow. Just kicking it, right? Maybe this rat song is appropriate.
With honors.
Thanks, Care Partner Senior Living. We appreciate it. In fact, when you call Care Partner Senior Living, this is the music they have on hold.
I hope so.
By the way, now that you've got a chance to listen to the entire catalog of Rat songs, you a fan now, Andrew?
Yeah, they're all right. I'll probably add them to my rock playlist.
Oh, look at the gift that you have given him there, Jimmy. Thanks, Care Partner Senior Living. Mom and Dad got into place in life. The house is just too big, too much to take care of. A new community awaits for them at Care Partner Senior Living. Check it out. Here comes the mailman now.
Wow, what a great outcome.
I'm the mailman, as you can see. I'm the mailman, don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman, mm-hmm. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Here's a question for you.
What kind of human are you?
Think about that. Yeah, it's deep. Hey, teeny tiny.
Hello!
Teeny tiny lady's a kind of human that lives in a pickle jar, and she chooses the letter of the day. We'll get to that in just a little bit, but first... See, it's all segues. The show's so tightly produced. Let's see. Let's get started with all the rest. Jimmy, let's begin now. Let's do building permits, number one. You got it.
Okay.
Red.
So 360. I'm on? Okay.
There okay. Mm-hmm.
There's too much BS involved in permits. Thurston County charged me $500 for a site inspection, and they Googled Earth It. Scam. Exclamation
mark.
Right.
That's what Thurston County. 206, I'm a permit reviewer for a large jurisdiction. I can say firsthand that developers frequently submit plans that are either incorrect, have glaring mistakes, or more often attempt to skirt rules and regulations to make more money. The same developers complain when it takes too long to review the plans. And the last one on 206 says part of the problem is the overzealous city council filled with folks who truly believe they are activists first and lawmakers second. They see an issue, affordable housing, and they write drastically new laws in a turn, add hours of training, and review all projects in the city.
Rabbi Machete Attack, mm-hmm. Attack. Area code 253 says, oh, sure, it's all Donald Trump's fault. Mm-hmm. There is no anger or hatred on the left.
That's right.
Never said that. There's equally on both sides.
No, we have a rule. We know a lot of comments.
I got you.
Right. 425 Washington State used to have a mental health infrastructure. My uncle used to be at Fort Silicon when, when our governors were cut the funding for the mental health here in Washington, they basically put him out on the street. They failed our mental ill citizens. And Linda in Bothell says, it is telling as soon as someone mentions that it is a divisive time in this country, John takes it as a swipe at Trump. Really? Divisive time is a fact. Trump was not mentioned, but the shoe fits. So, well, that's John assuming what was just said.
Mullet Mondays. Uh-huh. Joey the Garbage Man. Hey, what's up, bud? Curly, did you say Mullet Monday? Was it Jimmy's idea? It's not too. I'm not too sure about that. You know, actually, Joy, it was my idea.
It is.
I'm sorry about that.
Sorry, mommy. Didn't mean to embarrass you, mom.
Yep. Lindsay in Seattle says, "Oh man, if I can't listen, if you keep playing the headbanging music today, and 253 doesn't like Rat either. Oh please, no more Rat." And then finally, Chuck and Puyallup weighs in with, "Someone in Rat is related to Milton Berle, FYI."
Well, this is the last time we're going to be using Rat, so there you go.
Chinese restaurants. Area code 425 regarding the Asian restaurants closing. Same for Greeks. Old joke. Three Greek mothers are talking about their kids. Mm-hmm. The first says, my son is an astronaut. The second says, my son is the president. Third says, I've been beating you all. My son is a doctor.
You know, it's funny. I'm glad I gave you the joke. We got three dyslexics in the room, and normally I screw the jokes up. So you guys should get through that one. 206. That's why we shouldn't only accept the best and brightest immigrants. And Jimmy Tucker filling in. You don't write to read these. I'll read them because they're saying nice things about you. 425, Jimmy Tucker is awesome. 206 says, what, Felix wasn't available today?
No, he wasn't available today.
By the way, we try to balance this. Yeah. We don't want to give you a big head. 253, just FYI, entertaining and awesome co-host Professor Honky Honk doesn't slow down to look at a car accidents. By the way, that is what Professor Honk, first class that he teaches is don't look at accidents. And finally, 206, good show today, but why do I get the feeling that I'm listening to the Saturday Night Live skit, The Word Association, with Richard Pryor and Chevy Chase? Did you ever hear that one?
No, I'm not familiar with that sketch.
Is Richard Pryor related to Milton Berle?
Not to my knowledge.
All right, moving on.
Area code 360. What's even creepier about Kevin Spacey video is that one of his accusers recently committed suicide, which is sad but true.
We never got to that because I was too busy trying to get you on the record as to whether or not you thought John Wayne Gacy was a good clown. let's see. Turning person. Signal A in Enumclaw says, I never forgot something my driving instructor said. Question, what does it mean when you see a turn left or turn right signal blinking? The correct answer is it means that the turn right or turn left signal on that vehicle is working.
John's Christmas gift, area code 253. In addition to Curly's incredible, thoughtful gift of carpet cleaning, here are a few of his other Christmas gifts he has given this year.
Yes.
Mouthwash, deodorant, disposable wipes, a box of toothpicks, a comb, a bar of soap.
Yep.
And that was the same person. Such a kind and considerate man. God bless you, John.
Thank you.
Oh, and one last thing. I was lucky enough to be on the John's giving lifts as well. So let me say, thanks, John. My nose hairs have never been this tidy, neat trimmed.
I'm glad I could share you with that. Weston Puyallup, talking about the letter of the day, says, driving to Montana for Christmas and I got a speeding ticket. After that, my head was on a swivel. Also, John's number one idea of the year, Jacob, the file guy.
Oh, my God.
Happy New Year. All right, good. Thanks, Jimmy Tucker. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody.
Work in progress.
Out of time. Bye-bye.